We're discussing the Edmonton hockey graph, or the water graph. What is missing from that, or what's not right about that y-axis? Did you figure out this piece?
So when I looked at the other report where you said it had the abbreviations of the right.
Oh, don't say what that was.
But I don't know why that would be right.
Well, you can actually back calculate it and be sure it's right. They're wrong. And sorry, the report is right, but is wrong. The newspaper was wrong.
Yeah,
the newspaper was wrong. But at least the newspaper talked about it. What's missing? So as engineers, if you were studying water.
It's like time.
You need a time scale. You need a time unit here.
Yeah.
Right? You need a time unit. Because it's speed of the water going out, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's the water going out per delta T. So the question is, what's the delta T here? What's the unit here? And so now we get into it. There's at least three possibilities that I can think of. And some students said, oh, it's per hour. No. Other people revised that. They said, no, it's per minute. So this is per minute. Millions of gallons per minute. And I said, why are you saying that? And why do you think some people would say per minute?
Yeah, like that would make more sense to me than what it actually is. Because
I agree. And I was expecting it to be per minute as well.
Yeah.
But this is their logic. Their logic was, look at the graph is changing every minute. The graph is changing every minute, so it must be per minute. And I'm glad you're shaking your head about that. That makes no sense. You can take a graph of the speed of a car, and that's kind of an instantaneous speed, but you can make the resolution whatever you want. And you can change the speed to kilometers per hour, kilometers per minute, miles per minute, miles per hour. You can do whatever you want, as long as you tell people, right? You have to tell people what the units are. So that's what's wrong here. Yeah. So it's completely missing the time. Is it per minute? Maybe it is. Somebody else said, oh, it's per hour. And I said, why do you say that? He said, because they have tick marks every hour. I said, that's a dumb reason, but, right? That's just Excel did that or whoever, right? Or what other option could it be? What did you find on the web?
It's per day.
Per day.
Yeah.
Actually, if you're thinking about setting them up, which one would you set up yourself? Which one would you establish?
Probably per hour, but I don't know if that agrees with that.
Yeah.
Because per day is weird because it's like it's showing the entire day anyway.
The point is it's not. It is in one sense, yes. But in another sense, no. Yeah, because it can vary locally in time here, just like in your car, right?
Yeah.
But actually, per day makes, when I think about it now, per day makes sense to me. And because the cycle, if you like, a day is about the most basic cycle you have in life. Isn't it?
Yeah.
You have a week as well, and things are, you know, a little bit different in weekends and weekdays, but a day is a very natural cycle. Because you start out over again, whatever. You know, it kind of comes back to the same thing at midnight and starts over again. So to me, a whole day makes good sense. And it's probably gross. I mean, obviously, when they see this thing fluctuating around, it is as if this were going to go on for the day. It's what it's saying, but it doesn't have to. Just like your car doesn't have to go a whole hour to measure speed. You know, whatever. But you can use it. You can pretend if it was going at this speed for 24 hours is what it would be, yeah. But nobody would think of doing a speed per day, right? Yeah, because it's the wrong unit for that, yeah. So now the question is, I was able to back calculate this on my own without going to the paper. But what things would you need now to figure out whether this is per hour, per minute, or per day? Basically, what's the delta T here? The real delta T. I mean, you have the little delta T's here, but the delta T will be in units of a point of an hour or a point something of a day, right? So how would you actually kind of reverse engineer this and kind of back calculate to make sure this, oh, per day actually gives more sensible answers. And that's how I worked it out, is per day gives sensible answers. So how would you figure that out?
Roughly, like on the back of a napkin,
yeah.
Population of Edmonton.
Yeah, a quarter of a million people.
Yeah.
There's industry as well, but leave them out of it for the moment. Yeah. Quarter of a million people times.
How much I guess someone could consume in a day, so I think.
How much do you think people consume of water in a day? They don't consume it, it's mostly flushed down the drain.
10 liters.
Keep going. Huh? It's 40 or 50 liters a day per person. Per person. Yeah, yeah. Just tell me, think how many times you flush the toilet alone. Right? It's the biggest one. Right? Then washing and all the other things like the baths, showers, all that sort of thing. Yeah, yeah. I think 40 to 50. So if we did that, where were we? What did we say? 250,000 people, right, multiplied by 40 liters a day would come to, what's that? 3, 6, that's 100 million liters, right? That's 100 million, sorry, 10 million liters, okay, 10 million liters drawn out from the reservoir in a day. Right? So now, does that fit with what we're talking about here? We have, if this is 440 per day, 440 per day, and what do we have? So where's the average? Did you take the green one? That something that must be wrong here.
I think there's more people in Edmonton. I think they're more like 750,000.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
So it gets us a bit closer, I guess.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Because if you, what's this going to do? This is the main part of the day. Presumably water demand will go away. There's probably 12 hours when you're up, right? So let's say 12 hours of being awake. So there's 12 hours of green at around 400. Per hour, per day. And so if you integrate over basically half a day, so let's say that that green line is zero for while you're asleep, roughly, and then it's 400 for 12 or half the day. So what would that come to? That would come to 200 mLs. Is that right? 200 mLs. If the integral was of a zero, and then a wedge, you know, whatever you call the other thing. Yeah, this and that. So that would come to 200. And what did I calculate?
10.
I'm way off.
But you used 250,000.
Yeah, but even if I multiply it by 4, I'm only up to 40.
Pretty closer.
Yeah, yeah. I may be wrong with my 40 liters. I think it may be 40 gallons, for all I know. So, but anyway, the day one comes out, fits, whereas the hour one would be way too much, and the minute one would be way, way too much. See what I mean? So it turns out that it is, and there's industrial water as well.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
There's probably a lot.
Yeah. On a Sunday, I don't know. On a Saturday?
That's...
Yeah. There is, but there, yeah, there's lots of stuff going on, industrial, yeah, exactly. And there's leakage. Edmonton meters their water, which means they charge you for it, and people are very careful. And the biggest demand in the summer is watering lawns. It's by far the biggest, and it's a lot less in Edmonton than it is in Montreal and other places where we have free water, basically, and people abuse it. And then we have bad pipes as well that leak a lot of it. So a big problem. So that's the one. But I've shown this to a lot of people. And I'm surprised at how naive the answers are, even from very senior epidemiologists. And I even warned them. I mean, come on, if I come up to you and say, what's wrong with this? And so on, you should know there's a kind of a catch here, but and be warned that I'm missing, you know, something. So a lot of people did miss here, senior epidemiologists, senior statisticians, who should know better, missed the time element of it. But this to me is a rate. It's a rate. And it's a delta something over delta time. Right? So it's no different than a rate in epidemiology. We have events per time. Right? People forget that. I was reading a thesis, we'll come back to it in a minute, a thesis to do with hazard functions and the hazard proportional hazards model. Or something. And the first part of this thesis in a math stat department defined the hazard with some limit of a probability or whatever, forgot to divide it by delta t. There's a delta t in the definition of a hazard function. If there isn't, it would be impossible. What they did is they made the probability, the conditional probability, go to a limit as delta t went to zero. So the probability went to zero. Is that what a hazard function is? No, it's a probability per unit time. See what I mean? So you'll see it in a minute when we talk about the hazard units as well. They have units of time in them. Epidemiologic rates have unit of person time. You have to have. There are other rates where it's just proportions. The unemployment rate is a proportion. It's the denominator is is persons. But incidence rates, in the usual sense here, incidence density, whatever you want to call it, hazard rates, are events per person time. You have to have time. And it's actually one of the things that distinguishes us, I think, from the sociology people and the psychology people. When they get stuck in dividing up time, they're stuck. They don't know how to divide a person's time. You are either a whole person, and you can't be divided, so they don't know how to put you in one condition for some of the time and another condition for another time. So, for example, like next week when we come to being an Oscar winner, an Oscar nominee, they couldn't figure out that you could spend some of your time as a nominee and some of your time as a winner. So you're dividing a person's time. So that's the same thing. But the most famous one of all time, to me, is... and this guy has a very good Michael Friendly. He's a Toronto data viz. And he has a whole thing on graphics. And he's looking at the best graphics ever. And this is one from, who do you think that's from? I think that's the first chart ever in graphics from a guy named Playfair, who was, I think, a Scottish guy. Let's see if he has visit the gallery. Yeah, the best and worst graphics, and good writing, good graphics go together. Okay. Not milestones. Where does he his best ones? Visual delights. Okay, let's see if he has this one. No, I should have gone and looked at this first. But given you guys have fancy graphics now, yeah, here's the one. There's a lot of these, but there's the original somewhere, surely. This is the original. It's hard to do because obviously it's a low res of something. Tufte in his book has a very nice version of it. So what's going on here? This is drawn by an engineer named Minard, M-I-N-A-R-D, from Lyon. He was a very good engineer, apparently, at drawing why bridges are falling down, and his graphs are amazing, how you can look at the graph and see immediately what's gone wrong. But this, who has seen this graph? Good, where? Just in life?
Dr. Backer presented it in his class.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
Good. Oh, yeah. To me, Tufte, who is a very serious guru of visual stuff and has written four or five books, yeah, he said, yeah. But it's surprising that, yeah, it isn't there. So what can people follow quickly what it is? So it's, first of all, it's to do with Napoleon marching to Russia, to Moscow, and back. And then Hitler did the same thing, and Hitler made the same mistake. What's the big mistake that Napoleon made in marching to Russia? You know, he did in the middle of winter, or he did in the summer. He got there to Moscow by November, and the Moscovites blocked the city for him, and he couldn't get in. And I think they never took Moscow, I don't think. And then he had to march all the way back, right? So this is how many soldiers he started. Wherever the middle of Europe. He's marching east, and when he reaches Moscow, over there, it's, right, there's Moscow. And the poor guy has his tail between his legs and he's back. This is how many of his soldiers got back to wherever. So, most of them died of starvation and cold, and they didn't even have proper boots and buttons and things and whatever. And what else? The one thing that's below it then, what he put on the graph as well, this is already dramatic enough, but what he puts on this graph is what? On the bottom. It's hard to see here. You have to get a better version of it. It's temperature. So this is temperature on the way back, I guess, right? So he tells you at each place where the temperature was down to minus 20 or minus 30 or whatever, and that's where an awful lot of people died or whatever. So see if I have a better version of it.
If you just Google images, there are some fairly okay versions.
Oh, yeah? Yeah.
What? Just Minard graph.
Yes. And I think the guy who has it the best is Tufte himself. Yeah. Just where?
Just images. Just, yeah, like, instead of all, yeah, go to images. And then
oh, good. Yes. Oh, yeah. So these
not are great, but
No, but I think this should be the one from... Yeah. Yeah. Anyhow. Yeah. I mean, I'll put the link in for you anyway. You can. The main thing is to remember his name. Yeah. But in fact, Friendly has now converted that graph into rows, where he has denominators and numerators. One denominator and one numerator for every day of the campaign, and you can see the death rate. You could basically then plot the death rate as opposed to what you were seeing. You were seeing basically the survival curve. Right? This is a survival curve, but he's showing you where the big jumps were and where the big losses were, which days and so on.
So the one from National Geographic is great, and you can zoom in.
Where is that?
I don't know.
Oh, Tufte as well. Tufte is the guy who makes all the money out of graphics, by the way. He's around giving courses. He has a very good one.
He'll sell it to you.
Yeah, in fact, I was down in Australia, there's a guy who was a dean of public health in Melbourne. He got his PhD here, and he invited me to his house one night on the hall of his house. On the way in from the door, he bought this beautiful graph. Yeah, exactly. So here, yeah, you see the temperatures here and so on. Yeah. So that's it. The National Geographic has another good one, you think?
Yes, it's like you can completely zoom into it.
Oh my!
So if you go, wait, hold on. Let me see. Oh yeah, it's that one.
Which one?
To the right, to the.
This
right,
one?
Yeah, that one.
Oh.
And then if you go open, like right click, open image. Nope, sorry. Click on that one again, the one that's highlighted.
This one?
Nope, down. Over that way. Almost. Yep, the one that's highlighted. Yep, that one. And then right-click on the image, and then go open image in new tab or something.
Okay.
Open image in new tab. So down.
I blew it.
Go back and do it again, and just go down further. I mean, you can probably also just scroll. Actually, just there. Yeah. So if you scroll down, you'll find the. And then yeah. So if you click on that, it'll let you zoom.
Oh yeah.
And then it should at least.
Anyway, it's still pretty good. Yeah, it's still pretty. Oh, I see. It says there's a piece up here that.
Yeah, there's a.
Anyway.
Sorry.
No, that's fine. That's good. There's a lot of stuff. Yeah. So there's no excuse, but I mean, not to know about this. And a lot of people consider it still the best, one of the best graphics ever, because it puts so much into such a space without crowding it out.
Yeah.
Right. It's the clever way he has the two. Yeah. Okay. So, all right. So that's enough of graphics. So now we'll come on to today. I've been through, I looked through all five of the things you sent me. I've been through two of them in a bit of detail. So let's start with those first for your Oscar stuff. And what I think I'll do is I'll just... Yeah, I'll start here. So, because it's very interesting, everyone did something quite different. And I'm going to show you what I did as well, that's probably the simplest of all of them. Although a few of you were, did simplify it enough. So, who wrote this? This was, I'm guessing it was you who took an interest in this particular part. And it's the same interest I had. I mean, if you start reading any of these histories, they're pretty amazing, right? And they teach you a lot about what's happened in the 20th century to medicine and to public health. Yeah. And this is particularly the case that you look at the first two that died within the same year, right? And where were they? Were they Americans?
Or they were from Syria,
actually. Syria. Oh, that's right. The names look like... But they're Syrians coming to the United States.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, you can tell from here, that's right. Is this a different one?
Yeah. So one was...
One family, a different family.
And then, yeah, two different Syrian families.
Yeah. Yeah. So imagine you get off the Titanic, you get to America, and then this is still confronting you here. Yeah, exactly. And meningitis, I guess, was a common cause of death in 1912. Yeah, exactly. The one I remember is if you look through, and it was a first-class passenger, these are probably third-class passengers, right? There's a first-class passenger that, I don't know if he died the same year or within a few years. One of them, he was from Montreal, actually, and he was very young, and he died in Maine, in the state of Maine, and I'm guessing he died in the summertime there because Maine is a big place where rich families from Westmount would have a cottage down in Maine, near the ocean. Kennebunkport, you know, all these famous places where the Bushes and the others had theirs as well. And he died of ptomaine poisoning. P-T-O-M-A-I-N-E, poisoning. People know what it is? What do you get it from? When I was young, you were told to be very careful. If you're opening a can of beans, you know, a tin, and I don't know why we were told that, but something about metal and, you know, things in, it's a toxin, you know, something in the spoiled, if a can wasn't sealed properly, I think, it was something like that. Can't remember where else you get it. Ptomaine, P-T. And he was a first-class passenger, so, you know, from Westmount here, very well, you know, plenty money. Food poisoning caused by bacteria, that doesn't tell you much. But where we were warned of it was from canned food that wasn't properly sealed, and the bacteria got in, I guess, and we were answered. Yeah. So... Just to show you, meningitis, you couldn't do anything about. Ptomaine poisoning, I'm surprised, but, you know, even first-class passengers, yeah. There was another one, I think also Quebecer, died again down near, I think down in that same area in the summertime, of a traffic accident. A 7 or 10-year-old killed by a car. One of the first people killed by a car in the United States. Right, because cars didn't go that fast at that time. Yeah, so it's interesting how... but if you read through the Titanic ones, you will basically get a textbook of what causes of death were in the 19th and the 20th century. So I'm with you. I spent more time reading those than doing the analysis as well. Yeah. So my first question to you was, easier one to do is the male versus female death rates or longevity, whichever way you want to put it. And you see I'm putting it two ways. I'm putting it, longevity is in the time scale. The rates are deaths per time scale. So if you want to think of rates, they're the upside down of length of life. Right? You follow me? In fact, you can roughly work out the overall death rate in Canada. The overall death rate. Roughly. What do you think it is? Crude death rate in Canada. You have no idea? Then there's something wrong. We have to fix that. And yet if I tell you how long do people live, or at what age do they die in Canada? What age do people die in Canada on average? 80, well, that's a life expectancy, which is a theoretical one. If you actually look at the ages of death last year, you know, they're somewhere mostly in the 70s to 90s. So let's take 80 as a simple number, right? So average longevity is 80 years. I mean, there's a little problem with that, but anyway, okay? So what does that mean then? About death rates. And there's an assumption you'd have to make.
Death rate is low.
Well, okay, but could you put it into numbers? If I tell you the average longevity is 80 years, let's say that the population were in steady state. It's not. The population is getting older. So that messes up everything. But let's say you can imagine a population that's in steady state with respect to age. Can you imagine that? The age pyramid doesn't change. The age pyramid, it's not an age pyramid now, the age Christmas tree doesn't change, right? Say that were the same every year, and people were living on average 80 years, now can we work out the death rate?
Figure out how many people are 80 in the current year and...
Well, if you're in steady state, it means that the exits are being balanced by the entrances. That there's many people being born here to replace the number who died. So it's that's all it is. And then everyone's moving on, but it's like the example is like the bathtub with water. The tap is the births, and the hole in the bath at the end is the deaths. Right? So if you're in steady state, the bath is staying at the same level with the tap going in and the pipe going out. Right? So same idea here. And you're going along for about 8 years. But there are people exiting all along, but on average it's 8 years. So then what does that mean about the death rate?
1 over 80.
Lambda is one death in 80 person years. 80 person years. Right? See? It's a very simple point, right? And we teach them in completely separate courses. Rates in one course, average longevity in another. They're the same thing. One is one over something. It's like speed and distance. You know, you can do kilometers per hour, hours per kilometer. It comes to the same thing, right? And the same principle applies here. So you should be able to get a very rough idea. Now, of course, 1 in 80 is a very odd number because it's an average in a steady state population. And of course, you're immediately thinking, I can't think of an overall death rate because I think if death rates in kids are low, well, they go down, they stay low for 10 or 20 years, and then they start climbing by age. So you immediately think of the age-specific one, whereas the crude one is kind of an average of all those. So that's what I was getting at. So anyway, I'm going to do the analysis in the time scale. But if you do it in the rate scale, you're doing 1 over time. Instead of saying 80 years, it takes 80 years worth of stuff for one death to happen. Right? That's saying one death in 80 years. It's the same thing. Okay, now, yeah, so I said, yeah, by sex or gender, which is the, who lives longer or who dies, and be careful about people. Individual people can die faster, but a population of people can die faster, right? So when you talk about your chances of dying faster, or faster if you're a male than a female, or you die faster if you're a male than a female, that makes no sense. But males die at a faster rate than females. So the idea of rates and fast and slow are collective ideas. It's very hard to talk about that for the individual. You'll die faster. Look, you die in an instant. You die in an instant. But as a group, the speed at which these things happen is higher or lower. So be careful with individual versus whatever. And mortality, by the way, is that a group concept or an individual concept? It's very much a group, but you'll actually see people talking about mortality as though it's individuals. It makes no sense. It makes zero sense to have mortality as an individual idea. Right? Your mortality is something different, but the population mortality is what we're talking about. Yeah. So, okay. And then the more complicated one is the one by class, because there's probably less overlap in age. At least here you have women across all the ages, and you have women across all the classes. The same, you have men across all the ages and men across all the classes. So you have something more overlap, so it's an easier thing to think about. Right? But one of the big things, and not all of you talked about it, was, well, yeah, but as soon as I start comparing men and women, or men with women, I have to ask, when I said about fair comparisons, I want to say, yeah, but that's assuming we were comparing within a class, or keeping class constant, or adjusting for class or something. And we have to talk about that. And we also have to talk about the age they were when they got off the boat. Right? Their age at the beginning is a second factor. So it isn't just class differences, but differences in age, even within the same class when they got off the boat. If the women were older when they got off the boat, that immediately changes everything, right? I wouldn't compare you guys to 40-year-olds, would I? You know, whatever. It's not a fair comparison there, because the 40-year-olds have already reached 40 as well. So anyway, okay, so this is the better and easier one to deal with. Yeah. So I'm interested now, and standardized mortality ratios, I can understand, that's going to come, you're going to come to a single number from those, right? Eventually. So I think it's here. Is this it? 1.15.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, but you got there indirectly, right? Can you explain what I mean by that? You got to the 1.15 indirectly. I mean, I don't want to use that in a technical sense, but you got there in a roundabout way. Whereas I sort of was expecting you guys to leave the U.S. out of it. And the U.S. death rates, right? Didn't you? Yeah? Where did you do that?
We did U.S. mortality.
You did, yeah. So what you did is you compare where you're to... 0.92. So the 0.92 means what? For males, what does that mean?
Survival.
Yeah, so the death rate in the Titanic males was 0.92 relative to the death rate in comparable age and period specific men in the US. Yeah. So the men had a lower death rate than the average American death rate, right? It was 8% lower. And the females were 80% lower than US females. Then, and I guess then you took a ratio of this to this.
Yep.
Yeah. And then you get that. So is everyone okay with that? Or anybody see anything? Well, you can follow it, right? You follow it? Are you okay with it?
I'm thinking of if the US, test ratio between male and female is...
Tricky, yeah.
Yeah, like you said.
You're bringing it, yeah, you can, you're thinking mathematically indeed, and a lot of people raise this objection. You can only do this under certain mathematical conditions, and I think the technical word is mutually standardized. So it's a very tricky thing to get right, right? And I think that you're getting at it. I don't remember it, but I know there's trouble in it. You can get into trouble. Although it's a natural enough thing to do, and I would have thought of it as well. Yeah, it's natural enough, but I guess my main objection is, why are you going through the US? Why don't you go male to female directly? See what I mean? That's what I was getting. So some of the others did male to female directly. You did it indirectly through the male, right? Like a double difference, or if you like.
Yeah. At the beginning, also we were thinking about like
standardized mean difference in one.
Exactly. So, and that's what I meant by internally. It's internal to the male and female in the Titanic. You don't use any outside information. And I guess I consider it safer because every time you go outside, then there must be extra assumptions you're making with that. And I think, indeed, the assumption here is that the male to female is proportional the whole way through in the United States.
Yeah.
That there's a constant ratio of male to female in the U.S. Right? Across all ages. I think that's the extra assumption that's needed. But it's okay. Yeah. Okay. But it seems a bit odd. So now, so that's fine. So now, this is the key now. So let's say we accept that 1.15 in dollars indirect. The key now is what? How to say it, right? And so here's the, I know you're in a hurry, but this is the key now. And let's say, yeah, we're standardized, yeah, whatever. So now this is where language starts to matter, unfortunately. I'll show you some crazy examples of language in a minute. Is that the right? Can anybody suggest an alternative to those words? I know what you're saying, but I mean, translated, what you've said is that the rates are 15% higher in men than women. Right? So basically, it's kind of saying, if you were an insurance person setting premiums for life insurance, right? I always like the life insurance example. Because in life insurance, you buy a premium, or you pay a premium for, let's say, 1 year life insurance. You follow me? 1 year life insurance means what? You give the guy, the company, so much. If you stay alive during the next year, the company keeps your money. Right? If you die within the next year, the company gives your family back a lot of money. Right? That's an easy way to think. So if there was no profit involved, they're going to set the rates to make a profit. But if there were no profit involved and it was just sharing, profit sharing or whatever you want to call it, so that it's a balancing thing, it's just a group insurance or sharing or whatever, then it seems to me that if you were doing life insurance for men and women, you should be asking the men to pay 15% more premiums for next year compared to the men, the women. That's an easy way to think of it. What that's saying is that the death rate must be 15% higher for men than women this year, or at this age, at age 50, at age 60, at age 70. There's the idea of constancy of the ratio here as well, right? Which is the proportional hazards kind of model, isn't it? Yeah, across ages. Yeah, so that's kind of what you're getting at. So if you like, you could say men should have been paying 15% higher premiums every year they were alive. And win. Right? If you said that, would everybody understand? Right? That's one translation of a rate ratio. Is that men should be paying 15% more because that would keep things even. Right? So that's kind of what you're saying here. That's behind what you're saying. So now can we improve on the word? Yeah, the rate per year, which is a lot of saying. It's a lot of things. Yeah. One long way to say it is the age-specific rates. The age-specific rates were 15% higher in men than women. Right? Is it okay to say, so I'm okay with that, is it okay to say men die 15% faster. I should be careful. Men die instantly. But you see what I mean? The rate of death... Sorry, I'm trying to use the word faster. I can't say men die faster than women. They die at the same, you know, whatever. But the men cohort empties out faster. The bath empties out faster in men than women. Isn't that kind of what we're talking about? So that's what we're talking about, is exit rates, right? Exit rates from this live people. So I don't know how to say that. I would almost say men die faster than women. Would people understand that? Because that's we're looking for a description like that.
I would say they die faster. I would say they survive.
You have to leave surviving out of it, because the dying here is the main thing.
Die sooner.
But sooner now, what scale does that make you think of?
Like sooner after the event is a good way to.
Okay, but. You see that there's a language precision here that's very important, actually. Yeah.
So we also say that the men and the women, they are of the same age?
Yeah.
Hmm? So like, it is like comparing men and women of the same age, right?
Like the standardized part of it, I guess.
Okay. Well, that part we're okay with, but now we're trying to try and translate the 1.15.
So men and women.
Of the same, well, we assume it's the same age. So we assume year by year we're talking when they're 50, when they're 55, when they're 60, when they're 70. Yeah, we're assuming that it's a constant ratio. The death rate ratio is the same at 1.15 at all ages. So that's a big assumption in the model. It's not that far off, actually, but whatever. But it's the how to bring in the idea. I mean, if you only say mortality rates, they're 15% higher. That's okay, but it doesn't come across very well to the public. If you say something about insurance premiums, people kind of get that, because it's a something you have to do this year, so people can think about it for this year. And it also brings the window down to 1 year, doesn't it? When you talk about insurance premium, you're basically talking about in the next year, which is almost like a risk, right? It's like a short-term risk. I thought I had it. I'll show you in a minute another crazy one, where the one that you don't want to say, I'm going to send this around to, because it's a paper we've sent in, translating from hazard ratios here. This is like a hazard ratio or a mortality rate ratio, converting that to number of extra years lived. Because the others of you didn't put it, but you have it here. But some of the others, if you put it, was between 4 and 5 years was the extra life years lived by women than men. Right? So now the question is, if I give you 1.15, can you work out how many extra years that is? It would be useful, wouldn't it, to be able to go back and forth between hazard ratios and extra years lived? Because I think people in the public get extra years lived. There's no doubt about that. There's no doubt about. Even if it's hard to talk about at the individual level, they can think of it at an average level, right? On average, women live 4 or 5 years longer than men. People get that, right? Yeah. So, but the reason I'm bringing this up is because in this paper, which I'll send around to you, Harvard was looking at professional sports and whether people in the American professional sports live longer or shorter than the average, and also whether certain sports live longer than others. And they were talking about baseball players. Do you think they live longer than average? Than the average guy? Probably, they're healthy, they've done well, and whatever. What about football players? How about football players? Professional football players. Do you see any reason they might live less long? For a certain cause of death, there's a cause of death that's extra common in professional football players.
Head trauma.
You don't laugh. It's absolutely the
suicide
case.
Suicide from like.
Not trauma. Even though. Well, I don't know if it's suicide or not, but head trauma in general. Yeah, exactly. So they have a higher death rate by far. Of those kind of things to do with that, yeah. Other things are about the same. But anyway, they were talking about, I think it was the baseball players, against the American public. And the headline was, baseball players live 24% longer than the average American man. Baseball players live 24% longer than the average American man. Do you believe it? sounds like they're living to 100, because if the average American man lives to 80, 20% more on top of that is bringing you near 100. So what's wrong with it? So where the hell do you think they got that number from? And this was not the epidemiologist, this was the Harvard Press Office, who didn't translate it right. Where do you think the 24% came from?
I guess it depends who they compare
to. American men. So no, this like baseball players versus American, your average American man.
Okay.
Yeah. So that was the headline, which is clearly wrong. It seems way too much,
yeah.
Right? Privilege. Yeah. Right.
Maybe they use the Harvard baseball players and the
No. It's all American professional players. I see what you mean. They would be extra, yeah, because they're extra rich and educated and everything else. Yeah. No, it's an issue with the not with the people, but with the way of translating. They translated another number into 24% extra.
It's like a hazard ratio.
Yeah, so you go back to the paper, and there's a hazard ratio in the paper of 0.76. The hazard ratio is 0.76, comparing. The reference is the American men, and the index group is, or index category is the baseball players. So hazard ratio, so opposite from viewers, this would be like saying women would be below one here if we flipped it the other way around, right? But it wouldn't be 0.76 here, it'd be 0.85 or something for you. But in their case, it was 0.76 was the hazard ratio, and it was in the publication, it was actually fine. And somehow or other, between the translation between the epidemiologist and the press office, it got to be 20% longer. So what happened? They took a 24% reduction or difference in rates and converted that to a 24% longer mean longevity. And you're right. So that you cannot go from one to the other without some work and some thinking. So that's why I'm being careful here, because you see, you're heading that way as well, kind of, right? That headline is likely to be cut by our Montreal Gazette and say, women live 15% longer than men. Do they? Do women live 15% longer than men? Yeah, it's the rates are different. And the problem is the rates only get high near the end when it matters. The rates at the beginning are very low, so even if it's 15% or whatever, it makes almost no difference. It's the rates later on, so when they start getting big, that start affecting longevity, seriously. So what is the, if we convert, we know that women live 4 or 5 years longer than men, but percentage-wise, how much is that? 4 or 5 years out of 80, is about 5%, isn't it? 5 or 6 or 7%. So women live 6 or 7% longer than men. Correct. Yeah. And here would be whatever. What does that mean in terms of a hazard issue? So now work the other way around now. We have 4 or 5 years longer. What do you think the hazard ratio is? And some of you got a hazard ratio in this data set between men and women. Those of you who did the hazard ratio, what did you find? Some of you even had it in your answer. It's not an easy number to remember. And it's not a very, it's a hard number to think about. So even though you may have put it in the tweet or whatever, or in the abstract, we're now trying to translate it back. Those of you who did it directly, we know it's 5 years, 4 or 5 years. What do you think that corresponds to as a hazard ratio for men and women? Can you look it up, those of you who did it, as a hazard ratio? Somebody ran the model, the Cox model, and the others, which are hazard ratio.
We have like a 0.65 for...
There you go. Yeah. There you go. 0.65 is the hazard ratio of men to women to men. Right? 0.65 for women, 1 for men. That's the ratio. That's translating into a 4-year difference. Right? So now, the trick will be now, if we can go, I've got a general way, and what I'm going to show you or send you is a little paper that we wrote. We found it. I've been trying to do this for about 25 years. Find a way to go from a hazard ratio to a difference in years. And it bugged me and bugged me, and I couldn't get there. And finally, about 5 years ago, I found a paper from 2000 in the International Journal of Epi that does exactly that by a very simple formula. But there's some assumptions in it, but it's not bad for this kind of stuff. And so we looked at how much it had been cited, and very, very little. People are not getting the message. So we wrote another little piece with it, but we're kind of jazzing it up a bit. I don't know if I can find it here or not. No. We had to... here, I can get it in a different way. I think it's relevant here, and I think it's important enough to show you that... where it is, hold on. But it's something, it's a big frustration in epidemiology, actually. We're going crazy with these rates and rate ratios. I know we have differences, they're okay, and there are risk differences, but rate differences are harder to think about, right? Risk differences are kind of easy to think about. A risk for a proportion and a different proportion. But rate differences, okay, hazard ratios, oh yeah, they're easy to report, to put them in the abstract and whatever, they look impressive, but they're not easy to communicate to the public. So anyway, once I saw this, and I saw that it hadn't been used, we rewrote it, and it was the Harvard headline that got me thinking, we've got to get this out. If there's this stupidity going on from Harvard, we should try and give the press office a chance to translate. And so we aimed it also at the press offices and the others. Let's see if I can find it. Here, 601. It's under epidemiology. And it's under... from hazard ratio to whatever and back. Come on, where is it? You see the draft? Proof. Oh yeah, here it is. Yeah, so we just sent it in, Menglein and I, about a month ago. Have you any sense, before we do it, is what do you notice? There's a 4 or 5 year difference between men and women, and we're now saying that's a hazard ratio of 0.65. Do you think there's any way you can kind of go back and forth now from those? If you had one of them, could you get the other, and vice versa? That's basically what we're talking about. Well, and this is what we're calling it. We're trying to jazz it up a bit. The reason we're calling it Gumpert's Translate instead of Google Translate, which is what the usual is, but this is Gumpert's Translate. So we're using Gumpert's as a translator between the two methods. And let me just give you what Gumpert said, and you'll actually see it in your own data set. Who did the Cox model look at? You have a Cox model with age in it. What did you notice what the coefficient for age was in the Cox model?
1.08.
Gumpert's found that 1.08 200 years ago. This week, practically. His paper is in 1825, but he had been at it for a couple of years. So Gumpert's and some of the other actuaries noticed something 200 years ago that has barely moved. And it's what? Remember we were talking about premiums. The premiums you should charge people to kind of break even. Suppose now we have a 40-year-old and we're setting premiums for 40-year-olds. And we have premiums for 41-year-olds, and then for 42-year-olds. So how much higher do you think the premium should be for 41-year-olds than 40-year-olds? Percentage-wise. Well, it's a question of the ratio of the death rate in the year age 41 to the death rate when you're 40, right? The death rate in that year. Gumpert's found that the death rates going up by age, we're going up logarithmically, or you know, exponentially. And he found that they were going up by 8%. 8% per year is how death rates go up with age from about age 35 or 40 onwards. He wasn't the only, he found it, and he then mathematically, so what he did, he says, okay, that means if you took the log of the rate, it would be linear in age. And then he smoothed it out. It saved the actuaries weeks of handwork, because the actuaries had been doing life tables like you do from one row to the next, multiplying by multiplying by multiplying all these crazy numbers that are barely moving on. He smoothed the whole thing and said, it's 8% per year. Forget all the little jiggle in between. It's 8%. So then he could make an integral and he could work out over 40 years with one sum instead of doing it year by year with multiple, you know, numbers that are 1.07, 1.09. He said, come on, it's 1.08. And another actuary then got smart. Gumpert's paper is nearly impossible to read, but another actuary who had a degree from Cambridge got very good at it, and he wrote a whole book about it and said, there's a law, a very simple law of mortality. First of all, when you have infant mortality and it falls down to age 5 or whatever, the infant mortality falls at a constant rate as well in a log scale. So you have one line going down, you have another line going across here from about age 10 to age 25 or 30, and then from then on, from about 30, actually he said it's when you stop having kids, but anyway, it then goes up on at 8% per year. So he had this beautiful curve of the force of mortality is a log, is a straight line down, kind of flat, and 8% up. And all you do is need to plot the log of the mortality rate against age. And it was like a bath, you know, this thing. Three thing. And he published constants to 6 decimal places, and he called it a universal law of nature. Well, the strange thing is that even though things have gotten better in 200 years, the intercept has fallen. You know, the death rates themselves have fallen, but that idea of the connection with age is still there at about 8%. So it was 8% when he started. So this is our messages. You know, this is great. The guy did it, but it didn't work out. And here we're trying to do something else to, you know, make it a bit better. But it's only good for general mortality. It isn't good for sick people. It's good for populations. And so here's the beginning of the quote. Right? Look at it. Where did I see it? How come you can't see it? Hey, page 3. Oh, yeah. Okay. I mean, this is Harvard. Come on, don't believe everything from Harvard. Right? Yeah. But isn't it kind of dumb? Yeah. Yeah. So, and if we said this, we just marshaled what you said, right? That's exactly why we should happen then, if that's the case. Yeah. And when one goes back to it, one finds that it's a 0.76, 24%. So they took it one to the other. And but now, look at this other one. Hey, would that help you, Renzo? Would this have helped you in your word? I think this is good. The rate is 15% faster. People get that, right? The rate applies to the whole group, kind of, in a way, as well. So it's not getting into individuals. So, people die at a rate, that's one point. So it takes a few extra words, but it's worth it. That is quite clean to me. That says that the rate ratio is 1.3. Right? Yeah. But now the question is whether it's 0.76. The 0.76 is comparing baseball with American men. This is baseball versus football, I think. Right? And this is football players are dying faster than baseball players. Isn't that what it's saying? Yeah, something like that. Yeah, exactly. So how did we do it? Yeah, so we're basically saying we found Hebel's article, and he had a nice translation, but we don't think it was promoted enough, and he was too modest and so on. So, you know, we're trying everything. But Gumpert to Edmonds, those are the two guys who worked out the 1.08, right? Force of mortality and so on. And he thinks it's kind of that the curve starts going at 8% from about age 40 something on. It's not bad for a lot of it. It's rough. It's not always 8%. It kind of go up and down a bit, but it's a good start. So now, if I tell you that, and now I talk about a difference between a 40-year-old and a 44-year-old, right? So the 40-year-old and a 44-year-old. How much now are we talking about difference in premiums? A 4-year difference in age should now come out to what? It's 1.08 per year. It's a compound rate, so it's 1.08 to the power of 4. Or if you like, you can take e to the power of 4 times 0.08, roughly. Yeah, exactly. So there's the trick. Basically, it's 8% per year. So if I now tell you 1.15, what's that equivalent to now? About 2 years. It's about 2 years if our model is right. Because, you know, 8 per year, that's 15 or 16, yeah. Other people got a different ratio. They got about, what did you get?
0.65.
Yeah. If you go down or up by 4 or 5 years, you know, e to the power of 4 times 0.08 comes out, or minus it, comes out to about minus 0.65. Or text that point out, comes out to 0.65. Because it depends whether you're going up or down. Right? Yeah. So this is the point. So, yeah. So here's Gumpert's equation. See, mortality at age is a mortality age wherever you want to start, going up by the beta, and the beta here is, he found, 0.08. Right, and then you take the age minus the age zero. That's the linear part. Right? But now what we did is we took a bunch of countries from the mortality database, and we took, the red ones are in recent ones, the red are the old ones from 40 years ago, and the black ones are the fairly recent ones. And all we've done here is we've plotted the log of mortality against age. The log of mortality against age. And looking from the back of the room, they're not perfect straight lines, so it's not quite right, but my God, it's pretty good. For basic purposes, right? So Gumpert's is still not wrong, that the log of mortality against age, and we take from 45 onwards, which is kind of his end of creativity, up to 95. It gets messy after 95, the data get very sparse and so on, right? But they're pretty close to straight lines. These are the black are the recent ones, and this is 50 years ago, death rates. And I think here somewhere, I'll give you a day hard to read here. This is Norway. 0.11, that's 11% per year basically. 11% per year in Norway, men and women. NLD, what's that? Netherlands, 11 and 10. Sweden, 11 and 11. And Spain, 10 and 11. USA, 9 and 10. Canada, 10 and 10. So it's gone up a couple of... I thought it was a universal constant and was going to stay this way forever, the 0.08. It's now around 0.10, which actually makes life easier to remember. 10%, 10 is an easy number. So now we can basically divide the whole thing by 10 or multiply by... and what's this? New Zealand, 10 and 10. 10 and 10. 10 and 11. Japan is strange. Because why is Japan less of a straight line? One of the things is these are cross-sectional rates, first of all. They're cross-sectional rates. But you also have Japan after the war and Japan now. So it's like the young Japanese and the old ones. And you see a lot more trouble in the older Japanese because of what they had to go through and so on. So there's a bit of funny things. The most straight line above them all, I think, are the Scandinavian countries, which kind of had the least disruption and so on, or some of them from war and so on like that. Australia, again, it's a mix of, and when you have immigrants, it messes up things as well, right? You're mixing things, but the kind of pure Scandinavian ones. Canada is tricky. But anyway, they're not bad as a first go. So it's kind of a tribute to Gumperz and the other actuaries that they found this, and it's very useful, right? So it now means that we have a translation, and to say 40 to 44 is about, you know, 4 times 0.10. And so that, if you exponentiate that, it'll come out to e to the 1, it'll be about 1.4. So basically what you can do is, and I think we say this somewhere, you can take the log of the hazard ratio and divide it by 10. Take the log of the hazard ratio and divide it by 10, and you've got roughly how many years you're talking. That's also what he did. It doesn't quite work perfectly for technical reasons once you get up high a bit, but it's not bad. And so we talked about it as kind of an age shifting, because we think the public understands, this is maybe what you're getting at, the public understands that if I was told that I'm 72, but that I'm like a 78-year-old woman in terms of health, I think I'd understand what they're getting at. You know, that you know, I'm a lot older, trying to make an equivalent, right? And so people are using that in communication strategies for that. So that's what we did. So, so we're trying to talk about age shifts, see if that would resonate with the public. And this is the thing. But then we wanted to finish with this statement here, which, three practical examples. Yeah, so we then took, I guess we took this one, did the 1.3 for the baseball players. You have to do a small correction from the 2.62 downwards because, anyway, but I'll send you the article. Oh, where's our final one? Oh yeah, okay. And the small print meant we had to be careful. But here's the one we thought, we don't know if the reviewers will like it or not. How many people know this thing here? The commercial in 1973. Anybody know it? Maybe we're overclaiming here that Canadians still remember this. Certainly anybody my age remembers it because we were around at the time and it was a very famous commercial. But this is, the commercial is here. Let's see if I can, does the link continue on?
These men are about evenly matched. That's because the average 30-year-old Canadian is in about the same physical shape as the average 60-year-old Swede. Run, walk, cycle. Let's get Canada moving again. This message is brought to you by the CFL, CTV, and its sponsors for participation.
Right, I'll just play it again.
These men are about evenly matched. That's because the average 30-year-old Canadian is in about the same physical shape as the average 60-year-old Swede. Run, walk, cycle. Let's get Canada moving again. This message is brought to you by the CFL, CTV, and its sponsors for participation.
Yeah. Anyhow, so that's the main message. I will take a break now, but that's the main message between these two. And I think this... If this, get this out there, it might make a difference. You know, the guy had it 20 years ago, but it hadn't been promoted enough. So we're hoping it will. Because it's a pity not to be able to make that go. And this is what I'm saying is, you had a hard time even going from a ratio to a difference in years. And the difference in years is certainly something people can think of. Yeah. I mean, you do know when you see a hazard ratio of 1.04, it's not that big, right? But people are making a big deal of smaller and smaller hazard ratios now. We need a way of translating them back. So, okay, so let's take a break for a second. Yeah. But anyway, there's a lot just in this little story already. Talk to you later.